All right, you're in the arms room with Glenn
and John.
Whew, one day.
One of these days, we gotta do some pre-show, like after whatever we call it.
The problem is based on the topic of conversation we literally just finished with. We'd have to have some kind of rating system.
NC-17.
Children cannot listen to what we were just talking about.
Not at all.
No.
And you sure as hell wouldn't be able to, like, oh, I'm at work. I want to listen to The Arms Room. Like, it's bad. Our normal show is bad enough.
Yeah, this would have to be like an After Dark exclusive.
We'd have to make like a whole other patron level for it or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be.
With a disclaimer.
How much do they charge for Pornhub a month? Because that's basically what we would need to charge. Because that's basically what we're doing.
That's what we're talking about. It's not what we're doing.
I'll stick with what I'm saying.
Well, folks, the secret is out.
Well, here's the thing. There's no video on, so nobody actually knows if I'm wearing pants right now or not.
Nope. And even with the video on, they had no idea.
Yeah, technically, the table's mostly in the way.
Yeah.
I could never have pants on.
No pants dance.
That's why I don't stand up a lot during the show.
You move around
pants.
A lot.
I don't think Dave wears pants.
I don't.
Dave never moves out of that corner.
No. Mm-hmm.
That's my corner.
No.
Just watch everybody come in.
Oh, thank you so much to all of our patrons who support the show. We really appreciate you. Any level of patron. You guys are all awesome. And remember all the extra stuff that we're generating now. The extra 30-minute show is available to all the patrons through Patreon. That's every single week, and it's the follow-up show from the week before. So if you have questions or comments about a show, make sure you send them to us, because then we'll take care of that on the extra 30-minute show. We've still got the weekly blogs and show reviews that are being released. $10 and above patrons, you're getting your extra $10 show. So there's all kinds of extra stuff you guys are getting, plus the giveaways, and we're going to be doing more of those, the on-location stuff, everything we've been doing, all for you guys. So make sure that you're taking advantage of that extra content. And if you're not, we still appreciate your support. I mean, we really do. It helps keep the show moving forward and gives us the capability to do all those extra things. So that's part of what helped us be able to get better freaking internet here so that our videos are so much better on our live shows.
Yeah, it actually looks good.
It looks great, man. This week's awesome.
Oh, dude, it looked amazing. Yeah.
Make sure if you have show ideas and you're a patron to send us your show ideas. Anything you want to hear us talk about, even if we recently talked about it, if you're like, I didn't feel like that was in depth enough, let us know. It's the patrons that send us every single show idea that we have. Today's show, last week's show, the week before that. That's all ideas from patrons. Shows going forward. Next week's show is a patron idea. Your ideas we really do take seriously, so make sure that you are sending them over to us. Remember that you have coupon codes at WePleadTheSecond, which is Training AZ. You have a coupon code at KE Arms, which is Arms Room 2018, capital A in Arms, capital R in Room. You've got a coupon code through Warhorse Development, who we've had on the show as well, all caps independence. Mm. That'll get you 15% off. WePleads is 15% off. KE Arms, I think, is 20% off.
Mm-hmm.
Redwire Gear is TARP, capital T-A-R-P. And we've got, if you're a patron, is the patron code still active?
I think so.
On Square?
Yeah.
I believe it is. So
yeah,
I think it's all patron, right? That's what the code is patron.
Mm-hmm.
So all caps patron will get you a discount over Independence Training on our classes. I mean, there's other organizations that we get discounts through as well, all kinds. So if you're looking for some new gear, some new equipment, maybe shoot us a line and see if you get a coupon code there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We still have all those coupons, by the way, for the Well-Armed Woman that they gave us for Crimson Trace products.
Yeah.
50% off.
Yeah, buddy.
Only good through January. I'm going to order a couple of their lights.
Yeah, lights are great. I'm ordering a new rifle light.
Dude, with the coupon code, it's like $50.
Which would be last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's right, because we are
the
coming
future
to
and the present of the past.
That's right. This is a future show. I forgot until just now.
Yeah.
What's the future like? Well, it's
people
darker.
Are still shitty.
It's darker.
I feel so alone.
Things have changed.
Wow.
Things have changed. But we still have those coupon codes. Make sure you email us or message us or whatever. I'll almost send you. It's each coupon has its own individual code because it's only good for one item,
mm-hmm.
and it's only good for one use. So let us know. They freaking have some great stuff other than just lasers. You know, the lights are badass. I saw also they're coming out with a new series of optics. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah.
But anyways, their lights and lasers are badass, so it gives you an opportunity to nail that. Other than that, of course, we don't know what happened in the news. Again, politicians are still corrupt and shitty. Good people did good things. Bad people did bad things. Hopefully some good people did some bad things to some bad people. And yeah, kittens. John, what do you got?
Red bar, so always carry a lighter, whether you smoke or not. A lighter is an extremely invaluable tool. A lot of people get super hyped up about their survival kits and their primitive fire starting and all that shenanigans. And dude, just buy a Bic lighter. You can buy five of them for like $7. They're super cheap and they work 98% of the time. I've had a few fail just out of random failure, like anything else can fail.
But they still create sparks, by the way.
And yeah, and you still got a spark unless you smash it. And in a pinch, you can throw them really hard, and sometimes they'll explode. Once you burn them down a little bit, you throw them hard, they'll explode.
That sounds like something someone in a school, like an elementary school, you take this real hard, man, you throw this thing against a brick wall, man, freaking explode, man.
That's exactly where I learned how to do that.
Redneck coming out.
Yeah, buddy. So always carry a lighter. It's a super handy tool. You can use it for all kinds of stuff.
I picked up one of the little disposable jet flame lighters. They're like maybe a dollar and a half instead of 80 cents or whatever at Walmart in the checkout line just to see if it would work.
Mm-hmm.
They're cool.
Yeah.
They're windproof.
Yep.
For a buck, buck and a half, something like that. Carry a lighter.
Carry a lighter.
I kind of always typically have one within, close by.
I know you've got at least one in most of your survival kits.
Yeah, and I keep them in the truck. I've got one in the office. You just kind of keep lighters around. You're right. They're totally useful. Yeah,
super very handy.
Useful. All right. Red Bar Gear Moment brought to you by RedBarGear.com. Topic today is unconventional ranges and training on public land. To start off with this, we have to know that most people don't live in Arizona, obviously.
Yeah.
And that sucks for you. Arizona is 85% public land.
Yep.
So we can pretty much go out just about anywhere we want and set up an unconventional range.
Mm-hmm.
We know, however, that that's not a lot of states out there.
No.
Most of the states that I go to either recreationally or for work have very heavy limitations on where you can go to shoot. In fact, most of the places we go for work, if you're not on a designated shooting range,
no shooting.
You're probably not shooting unless you have some great piece of public land or whatever. And even then, sometimes it's very heavily restricted. So what we're going to talk about today, excuse me, is a lot more focused on the unconventional ranges, meaning you're not going to show up to a place that has everything already set up for you,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to training on public land. But we're also going to talk about some of those legalities and things to consider when you are on a public land, because obviously a lot of our listeners are still in Arizona and Texas and Nevada and Utah and Colorado and places where you can go and set up on public land. So the first thing I would say about setting up an unconventional range is have goals.
Wait, what?
Yeah, because if I don't have goals, then when I go out to shoot or train, I'm just going to end up shooting. I'm just going to end up like, all right, I'm out here. What do I want to work on? And I'm like, well,
I will go one step further than goals, because everybody has goals. Have a plan.
Yes, have a plan.
A specific plan. Hey, I'm going to go out today, and I'm going to work on X, Y, and Z.
Mm.
I'm going to do it in this order, in this manner. And then once I'm done doing X, Y, and Z, then I can have a little bit of fun.
Mm. Yeah, I can shoot for fun or maybe I'm done, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to dedicate 50 rounds to this plan, whatever.
Yep.
I'm going to accomplish these goals. I'm going to track improvement. I'm going to set some new standards. And then, yeah, I'm going to shoot for free or shoot for fun, or I'm freaking done. You know, mm-hmm. I've expended the amount of rounds. What I see typically happen is people go out if they're not shooting a standardized course of fire – and they just shoot.
Yep.
And they shoot a whole bunch of rounds, and they don't really get any better. And then they're like,
and you
well,
get
I
done and you're like,
guess
oh my
I'm
God.
Done. You know, they got a huge pile of brass, and they're like, I guess I'm better now. You know?
Probably not, but maybe.
It's like here's the best way I can describe it, right? It's like thinking masturbation makes you better at sex.
Not true.
Right? Because that's basically like we say that a lot in training, like we call it ballistic masturbation, mm-hmm. or we say certain things are like masturbatory, right? We're not trying to be crude, but it's something that everybody understands, right?
Yes.
There's not a human being ever anywhere that's like, what's masturbation? Like everybody knows what it is. If you were a lone person and you grew up in the jungle all by yourself, by whatever word of language you spoke, you would know what masturbation is. Like everybody knows what it is, right? So we use the term because we know that everybody knows what it means. and everybody can kind of get on board. It makes sense to people, right?
Yeah.
So we're not trying to be necessarily crude doing it, right? But it's always relatable to people. Just going to shoot doesn't make you better at self-defense. It doesn't even necessarily make you better at shooting, right?
No.
And it doesn't make you better at self-defense. It doesn't make you better at competition. It doesn't make you better at any of that if you don't have a plan and you don't have any goals. And I'm not setting up a system of standards and measurement and pressure testing like we've talked about on the show before. So like John said, a plan. A very specific plan. Now, once you get there and the weather is what it is, or you're feeling a certain way.
You can't be super rigid with it.
Yeah, or you start shooting and you're like, oh, damn, I'm really liking this. Or, oh, this is really challenging me more than this other thing, so I really want to spend more time on this challenging thing. You can take the plan in different directions, mm-hmm. but still have a plan.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just show up and you're like, well, we shot a whole bunch.
Well, it's like – I have a goal right now of losing 3 to 5 pounds, right? That's a goal. So I could go to the gym with the goal of losing that weight. But if I don't have a plan of how to get from A to B, that goal is
– doesn't matter.
Useless.
Yep. Or you could go to the goal – or, I mean, you could go to the gym, I mean, with the goal but without a plan and go, I'm at the gym now. So I'm going to go run on the treadmill for a few minutes, and then I'm going to go lift these heavy weights.
Yeah.
And without the plan of, well, hold on a second, am I ever going to get to the point of losing that 3 to 5 pounds? No, just going to the gym does not help you accomplish your plan. Just like just going to the range. Like I'll hear people say all the time, oh, man, yeah, I go to the range like once a week. Like, yeah, so what? Again, I know people who jerk off 2 or 3 times a day, right?
True.
It still ain't helping them, right? It still ain't getting them laid. You know what I mean?
Because like, they're spending too much time jerking off.
But you see my point? Like, yeah. It's the same way as when people are like, oh, yeah, I go to the range once or twice a week. Yeah, I go there. I do this. I do that. Or I'm like, it doesn't matter. Are you tracking your performance? Are you measuring anything? And then are you taking that and pressure testing it in some way to make sure that what you're doing actually even freaking matters? Are you doing anything other than shooting at static, compliant, non-competitive targets? Are you doing it under any kind of stress? Let me guess. Those are probably the kind of people that generally like they'll cancel a range day if it's too cold, too hot, if it's windy, if it's raining, etc. Yep. I won't go out there when it's raining. That sucks. Yeah, whatever. Have a plan. Right. The second part should be safety and emergency prep. So that's something to take in consideration when you're going out there. Number one, when you're setting up an unconventional range, be sure you're backstop.
Oh, absolutely.
Know where your rounds are going to go. Plan for worst possible scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Also, be aware of other people who might be in the area. Now, there's a range here in Arizona, down in Casa Grande, that is an open to the public range that's kind of set up. Like it's got an awning and benches and all that, but it's kind of a first come, first serve range.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a members only range. You don't have to pay to use it. It's just kind of an open to the public range. Now, if I go there, I'm still, even though it's a pre-setup range and it's got backstops and all that, I would still consider that an unconventional range because you're still showing up and anybody else can do whatever they want.
Yes.
So that's kind of – anytime I think of an unconventional range, it's like there's no one else – there's no one really in control. I'm not in a box or in a lane having
there's
to shoot
not
from this
Nazis
at this standard
and
time. There's no range officer. Yeah, there's no range Nazi who's like, you will shoot now and then you will stop shooting now. That is – it's a completely uncontrolled range. That's what I consider unconventional. So if I'm going to be out there and there's going to be other people around, I have to consider who they are and what they're doing also. And that includes non-shooters.
Yes.
Because in Arizona, you may set up a place or a range where other people may be doing other things. I mean, if you remember.
Like
there
was riding quads.
Like riding a quad, right? You and
between
I
between your firing line and
thing.
Your targets.
John and I were teaching a class on an unconventional range. I think was it a carbine class or handgun class?
It was handgun.
Teaching a handgun class.
Because we had the dangler.
Unconventional range. Oh, that's right, the dangler. Yeah, I remember that person. So we had this person who was being insane with their handgun. But we were set up on a line. It was in a good location. We had cleared the area. We had a good backstop and everything. And here come these two younger people on quads, literally right between us and the targets.
Yep.
Just totally oblivious. I mean, like they come into this opening, this clearing where there's a whole bunch of vehicles parked and a whole bunch of people standing in a very freaking straight line and a whole bunch of targets over here. And like they did not put two and two together and literally just rode right between, I don't know, 10 students and their freaking targets.
Something like that.
And you're like, holy shit, man. I think you went and ran them down. We're kind of like,
well, and there was one guy that stopped.
Oh, that's right.
Because there were, I think there were three guys. Three? I don't three quads. Exactly. Anyhow.
Yeah.
Three quads. Two rode through, and the third guy was like,
that's right. He stopped.
Because he was older. Yeah. He was. Older kid. He was like
the
17
two younger
or 18.
Folks freaking blasted through there. And I think you went and talked to him. We're just kind of like, hey, guys, this is a freaking shooting range, man.
Yeah, hey.
And they were like, oh, shit. You know, yeah. Pay attention. Don't expect other people to know what you're doing.
No.
I had a similar experience. I remember growing up, Dad and I were we were out, you know, in the desert by the house, and we were checking zeros on hunting rifles before we went out hunting. We were back at 200 yards. We've got the truck parked, you know, 200 yards, nice big back berm. And, you know, we were always very safe. Dad's a very safe person. And, excuse me, we're propped up on the truck getting ready to shoot. And I'm just about to, I mean, I'm like putting pressure on my hunting rifle, and my dad squeezes my shoulder, and I look up, and here comes two guys on dirt bikes. I mean, they never even had an idea, just wow, right between us and the target. Now, granted, it was 200 yards away, but it was flat, and it was a big open desert area. So it's like, dude, if they would have looked over and been like, hey, look, a truck is parked there. We should pay attention to what they're doing. And then if they looked over to the left, they might have, maybe not,
maybe
have seen the target. But it's one of those things where it's just – be aware of what other people are doing, man. If you're going to be on public land, you should always be aware of what other people are doing. But
and the safety and emergency
don't assume people are safe.
Even goes to like your normal ranges.
Oh, definitely.
Always. Yeah. Always, man.
Yeah.
Because I've seen some of the most asinine things I've seen are at like public ranges, you know, or indoor ranges. You see videos all the time on Instagram, Facebook. You see, you know, it's just people do dumb things because they don't know what they're doing, and they don't know that what they're doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So always, anytime you're around firearms, safety is number one, always in the front of your mind, and then have a plan for if things go bad.
I would even consider Cowtown Range, where we go, use like an unconventional range, because
to a degree it is.
Even though it's a member only range, they don't have a range staff there. So you have to pay to play, but there's no range staff. So you can show up, go into a bay, set up kind of however you want, and then just begin. And certainly while I've been there, I've had rounds come over the side berms. You know, I've had some kind of sketchy situations there because there's no one there supervising it. So it's kind of up to each person to be their own safety officer and to make sure that they check on other people. So I know when I'm there and other people show up, whether I'm teaching a class or just shooting there on my own, if I have the opportunity, I'll go and talk to people like, hey, just so you know, I'm doing this over here or I've got a class going on over here or whatever. You know, so don't be shooting at the side berms. Don't be launching rounds over. Maybe you can adjust your course of fire here or something like that. And usually people are pretty chill about it. And at a range like that, that is really off the grid. And I mean, Cowtown Range, it's really off the grid. And it's well outside of town limits. Well, actually, technically it's in city limits, but it's well outside of ease of use of getting emergency services to you. And, you know, it's going to be a 10 or 15 minute drive back into town. And you've got a lot of ranges, obviously, on public land where you're going to be well beyond 10 or 15 minutes
away. Oh, my God, yeah.
Like you said, have a plan. So things that I would always recommend people bring to ranges are things like a shovel, a fire extinguisher, obviously a trauma kit.
Not tracers.
Do you remember when we freaking lit the woods on or the desert on fire? Yeah.
That's why I was chuckling.
I have never sprinted 500 yards that freaking fast.
The target was 500 yards. The sprint was not. Because it flat
because
straight
all the
line.
Watches.
Flat straight line, it was 500 yards.
I probably did run about 3/4 of a mile.
Yeah. But with the ups and the downs that you could not see from where we were shooting, that was quite the run.
And so I'll tell you guys the backstory on this thing we're joking. This was a long time ago. God, this was probably eight years ago.
No, not quite. It had to be less than seven. Because we...
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so maybe it's like 6 years ago.
Yeah,
so
five to six at least.
So we were out with a couple of friends, and we were shooting in the desert, and one of our buddies, unbeknownst to us, had put some tracers in. He wasn't trying to be a dick or anything. He had this old... Was he shooting like a Mosin or something like that?
It's some old...
It wasn't even a Mosin. It was some old freaking gun he had, and he had this old surplus ammo, and mixed in there was some tracers. I don't even think he knew there was tracers. It was this old shitty surplus. We were just kind of dicking around shooting this thing, and there was this big steel target out of like 500 yards. We're trying to shoot it with this old freaking rifle and just kind of having a good time, and I was spotting for him, and I'm like, dude, that thing's on fire, and so we call it cold, and just I grab a shovel, and I take off running. And a buddy of mine grabs a fire extinguisher and takes off running. And John, I don't remember how quick you got out there. It was four of us.
Yeah.
So I am hauling ass, man. I'm running as fast as I can possibly move. There's two things you don't want named after you, right? A high school.
And a wildfire.
And a complex wildfire, right? Those are two things you do not want named after you. And so I am just sprinting as fast as I can. And by in the time it took me to get there, which, as you said, was up and down, washes and everything. God. I showed up with the shovel and started attacking this thing and trying to cut a fire line around it and everything just before I think Shannon got there next with the with the fire extinguisher, and he started spraying around.
And then I came in with the second extinguisher because our other friend ate shit. he hardcore like scorpion said, man, yard sale, bro.
He does freaking washes and everything. He's in the desert. Yeah, he did.
He ate it
pretty hard. He got there. He's pretty beat up. But by the time I got up there, I bet it burned, I don't know, 25, 30 square feet easy.
Yeah, it burned up pretty quick.
I mean, it burned up really fast. So luckily we were able to get up there and put it out. But without having things like shovels and fire extinguishers, we would have been
up there stomping and peeing.
Dude, we'd have been in trouble, man, because that whole freaking hillside was full of dry material, and like any hillside in Arizona is, and we were struggling to get it out as was. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely make sure that you have that kind of stuff. And of course, the thing we've talked about probably the most on the show is a trauma kit.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're at a normal range, you should have your own trauma kit. Don't assume that range staff knows what the hell they're doing. Let me tell you, I travel all over this country. We train all kinds of people. I go to all kinds of ranges, and I would say 9 out of 10 times.
They have no idea what they're doing.
A range officer has zero idea about what to do in an emergency. They've never been trained. If it was, it was minimal.
And they might have a first aid trauma kit there, but...
Maybe.
Yeah.
So... No one's coming. It's up to you. All right.
Yes.
Save yourself.
Literally.
All right. Save yourself. And that's at a normal range. At an unconventional range, even more so.
Oh, yeah.
Have your own trauma kit. Have a trauma kit that's well flexed out. Not just a tiny little IFAC, but something with a little bit more like in it than a typical. Kit. Yeah.
Something you would carry in a vehicle size.
Carry a trauma kit on your body because you don't want to be downrange when something happens and now you're 50, 100, 200 yards away from, you know, your trauma kit. Carry something on your body that can be small. Obviously, we're big fans of the AFAC, John's Mark 82, the Blue Force Gear Mini Trauma Kit, the Coyote Tactical Burrito. There's so many.
Oh, dude, there's a ton.
Dark Angel Medical's got a nice little IFAC they put together.
Tag Premier's got a nice.
There's so many people that build a small little freaking IFAC that you can carry with you. So always
I'm partial to the Mark 82.
Yeah. Just, you know. We tend to be partial to Mark 82 and AFAC because we use them all the time. We really trust them. And we know that they're very flexible. But there's all kinds of options. Right? Whatever you can get your hands on, that'll allow you to carry a trauma kit on your body. Mm-hmm. I don't give a shit if you freaking shove a tourniquet and a bandage and a chest seal in your pocket. Do that.
Yep, that works as well.
But one way, shape, or form, have that thing on your body. Then have a larger kit with you at the range. Mm-hmm. But make sure that you're paying attention to those. Make sure you're paying attention to other emergency things. Like, man, have lots of extra water.
Have shade.
Have some shade. Make sure you bring sunscreen. Make sure you wear the right clothing for the environment.
Don't wear flip-flops and tank tops.
Dude, it's not a good way to train or practice. You go, yeah, it's fun to go to the range that way maybe every now and then or something, but I'm not going to do that because it's going to put me at risk for getting hurt, for getting burned, for getting cut, for not enjoying the experience. So dress appropriately. Check your vehicle for emergency use. Make sure you're going out there on a full tank of gas if you're going to an unconventional or as full as you can get. Make sure your vehicle's in good operating condition. Make sure you got good tires, blah, blah, et cetera, right? Make sure that your freaking equipment is dialed in. Make sure you bring out maintenance equipment for your guns and everything. Make sure they're safe to operate. So just kind of generally have an emergency plan of what am I going to do when things go wrong. I recently taught at a big seminar that had a whole bunch of people there who were all in charge of shooting groups around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And there were probably, I think there were 120 people in the class, something like that. And it was really a seminar more than a class, but the first thing we covered was making emergency plans for your shooting group. I was amazed at how few people had legitimate emergency plans for what to do if something were to happen on their
own. Well, everybody has the, well, I'll just call 911.
I'll just call 911. So now it's like, well, how long does it take them to get there? Who are you going to be routed to? Have you ever called 911 and had their ambulance come out or talk to their ambulance people about where they're at, how long it takes them? If a helicopter needs to come out, do you know where an HLZ is? Who's the person in your area who can designate an HLZ? You know, have you trained your staff or your cadre or your volunteers or whatever on how to call 911, what to tell them, mm-hmm. how to get them out there? Do you know the GPS coordinates of where you are? If it's a place that you go regularly, when I get to a place I don't go regularly, it's easy to pull that thing up real quick and send it to somebody and go, boom, here's my coordinates. Here's a Google Map link of where I'm at. I use a program called GPS Status to do that on my phone. You know, it's a free app. You can get it. Boom. It just pulls your coordinates and your Google Map link and just send it to somebody. What? This is exactly where I'm freaking nice. At. Super easy. And, you know, do you do all that? You know, do you know what the transportation time is from where you're at to your nearest level of care? Do you know where your nearest level of care is? Do you know what level of trauma center they are? Mm. Are they a trauma center? People are like, oh, there's an urgent care down the street. And it's like, well, look, unless you need a splinter pulled out or a Band-Aid put on, you probably better go someplace other than urgent care. No offense, by the way, to anyone who works in urgent care. You're doing good work, but you don't have trauma capability, right? Everybody knows that. So if I need trauma capability, I need some type of trauma center. What level of trauma center is it? What can they handle? You know, those are all things that are easy to find out. It's all public information. But if you've got some place that you go regularly, that should be part of you building your emergency response plan. There's more to it than that. We could do a whole show on building an emergency response plan. Maybe we should do that, Dave. But but that's something to, you know, to incorporate if you're going to be especially in unconventional ranges. Also consider that most ranges that are normal ranges, they don't have any idea about the fuck I just said, right? Valid they also point. Don't have freaking emergency plans. Again, I train all over the country at all kinds of different ranges, and the first thing that I do when I go to a range, it's established, because I do train at some unconventional ranges, private land and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if I go to an established range, the first thing I go is, what's your guys' emergency response plan? And usually it's like, well, we call 911 and, you know, Bob over there is a former paramedic and we got this guy over here. He was a Navy corpsman back in 1986, right, Joe? And Joe's like, hell yeah, go Navy. And you're like, fuck. You know what I mean? We're dead.
I'm going to die.
Because there's no actual freaking emergency response, you know. A plan, like you mentioned even with training, a plan is required, not just a vague idea of what you're going to do. And the problem is that most people never have emergencies, so thus it's not real enough to them. Yeah. So then they don't really plan.
It's not real
for
it. Until it
well,
is.
Well, hell, man, we've been in business for 20 years. We've never had an emergency until tomorrow when it happens. And now you have an emergency and you haven't planned for it, and now you're screwed. So have a plan. That having a plan will help you to expose what tools you might need. Maybe it's better communications equipment. Maybe it's a better trauma kit. Maybe it's trauma kits placed around a range that you're at. Maybe it's, hey, I do need to carry one on my body somehow, but I just want a small one. That's okay. There's a lot of small stuff out there. The next thing you want to check out is legalities.
Mm.
And that was something you brought up before the show, John. And
yeah. So even though Arizona is 85% public land, there's a portion of that public land that you may not do target shooting on.
Mm-hmm.
And there's portions that you may not do hunting on and, mm-hmm. you know, so on and so forth. And it's just being familiar with your area, I think, is the most general way to say it without trying to dig into the weeds, because you could really dig into the weeds on some of this stuff.
By the way, in Arizona, that's Arizona State Trust land. It's illegal to target shoot on Arizona State Trust land.
And,
legal to hunt, illegal to target
practice.
And there's actually
also
some Arizona State
National
Trust.
National Monument land, too.
Yes,
there's
National some Monument.
That's there, illegal to do target on.
There's actually some Arizona State Trust land it's not even legal to be on mm-hmm. unless you have written permission, which is a hunting license or actual written permission from AZBLM. Yep. So important to know.
Yeah, extremely important to know.
Then there's going to be limitations on where you can shoot, even like in the National Forest, where we can shoot here in Arizona
and BLM. Like in other states, there's, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of places in the Midwest, there's not a lot of center fire rifle hunting.
Mm-hmm.
It's all got to be done with shotgun.
And you can't, does that mean if I can't hunt with a center fire rifle, sure
probably
as
can't
not,
go
I'm target,
out there target
shooting out there with one either. So there's going to be restrictions on that. There's going to be restrictions sometimes on the types of targets that I use.
Mm-hmm.
For example, binary exploding targets of any kind are actually illegal on all public lands here in the state of Arizona. A lot of people don't know that. The law's been in effect now for several years, and so a lot more people – at the first year or so, they weren't really being that bad about it. They were just warning everybody, hey, guys, the law has changed. It's important that you know it. And they're ticketing people now.
Yeah.
So it's really important that
and
you
And I feel
know.
Like that's – I feel like that's one of those broken tell-like things. To a degree.
To a degree, but they're pretty actively enforcing it these days because, you know, we've had a couple of deaths
there's been some related
here in Arizona to people being stupid with exploding targets, not blowing people up, but managing to hurt themselves.
Well, almost.
Where that kid got killed because they blew up that freaking
dryer.
Was it a dryer or something? Door came back and hit him or something. But it was like a 12-year-old kid or something like that got killed.
And then,
killed,
of course, there was our infamous YouTube video. Dude blew it, cut his leg off by blowing up a lawnmower.
Yep. Still your ringtone, by the way.
No, is it?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, blew my leg off. Every time John calls me, I let it ring for at least 30 seconds just so I can listen to that very hilarious bit. But yes, you know, so there's going to be limitations on that. There's going to be limitations on how close I can be to buildings.
Times of day.
Times of day that I can legally shoot. Sometimes certain places are closed off if there's livestock in the area.
Yep.
So all these rules are all things I have to know. Even in a very free state like our beautiful Arizona here, that's 85% public, we still have a lot of restrictions on what we can do shooting-wise.
Yeah.
That, you know, how close we can be to things, people, et cetera, on public land. So it's up to you to know the laws. If you don't know the laws,
ignorance is not an excuse when it comes to
the law. They will still give you a ticket or arrest your ass.
Yep.
So
the cop does not, you know, care that you're
we got
stupid.
Things like Indian Res land where sometimes it's really God, vague dude. Sometimes on when you cross from public land onto Indian Res. And, dude, if they catch you on the Indian Res, all bets are off, man. Yep. They will take your truck. They will take your guns. They will take – you'll put your ass on foot patrol walking back on a white man land because they do not mess around with
their
freaking laws, dude. And that's not 100% of the time, but I'll tell you – I've had some interesting experiences with them. I certainly know some people have had some interesting experiences. Do not mess around with that if you're in Arizona. I don't know how reses are in other states. I imagine they're probably the same.
Mm-hmm.
But, you don't mess around with the Indian Res cops in Arizona. They will flat jack your shit up.
Don't mess around with the Res, period.
So the legalities there are going to be really important. Any other legal stuff that you can think of? I'm trying to think if there's anything else legality-wise that's really important. I'm sure there's a glaringly obvious thing. If you're going to mess around with any NFA stuff, SBRs, suppressors, full auto, anything like that, on public land especially, my recommendation really around people, same thing at public ranges, I really recommend that you carry your stamps with you, you know?
So I will –
because I know not everybody does. And technically you're supposed to,
yeah,
but I know not everybody does.
When you actually sign up for that stuff, it tells you that if with this weapon, it's supposed to stay with those devices all the time. But what I have done and what most of the other people I know, because I have a few NFA items, is I made copies and then my originals are in my safe.
Right.
And I have copies that are on like a write in the rain style paper that I keep generally in my rifle case or in my range bag. And to be totally honest, from my understanding and people that I've talked to, local cops can't actually enforce that stuff. Yeah, there's always a but.
I don't want to be out there discussing the finer points of the law with law enforcement.
And also, depending on your area, a lot of your local cops are not that keyed into it anyway.
That's the biggest concern is not
they just don't
whether
know.
Or not they can enforce it. They don't know.
Yeah, they don't know anything.
So if you're like, yeah, dude, I have all my paperwork here, they're like, oh, cool, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with a range. Like a range, a professional range, a normal like setup, pay-to-play, ROs and all that, they're not going to let you shoot anything unless you can prove that it's legally owned sometimes. Not every range is going to do that. But I've been at ranges before and been asked to produce paperwork. I was shooting full auto mostly. Never suppressors or SBRs, but shooting full auto. Where they're
sense.
Like, hey, you know, if they allow it. And some ranges don't even allow that.
True.
But I've been at ranges before shooting full auto stuff. And people come and go, hey, those are all legally owned, right? And you're like, yeah. And they're like, do you have proof of that? As soon as you pull out that folder full of stamps, they're like, forget it.
Like, never mind.
I get it.
You're
good. Or you pull out a folder like, you know, when I go out, usually I'm with like an 07 FFL or something. So we've got a whole bunch of stuff. And he's like, he opens up an FFL. They're like, forget it. Never mind. You're good to go.
Yeah.
They just want to see that you have some proof.
Yeah.
Because we actually have a student that years and years ago, he was telling me this story about himself years and years ago before he really knew about NFA. And he illegally assembled an SBR, not knowing.
Oh, yeah.
He just didn't know the rules, and they weren't very popular then. But look, you can buy an SBR, right? You can buy an upper.
You can buy a 7-inch upper.
And buy a freaking 7-inch upper, and that's what he did. He walked in the store, and he bought a short-barreled upper, and he was like, cool, this is cool. Why doesn't everybody do this? And then he put it on his lower, and he's out there shooting at the range.
Illegal weapon.
Yeah, he's basically just assembled a felony, and he's at the range shooting it, and he got to talking with another guy there. And the guy was asking, oh, that's a cool SBR. And the guy's like, what? And our student was like, what? And he goes, that's a really cool SBR, man. How long is it? And he's like, I don't know. You know, and he's like, you don't know how long your SBR is. Like, and he goes, hey, man, do you know what an SBR is? And he's like, no, I don't. And he's like, hey, man, how much do you know about the NFA? And he's like, I don't know anything about the NFA. So this guy actually turns out to be
federal,
a federal cop.
Nice.
And it doesn't, not a dick,
yeah,
but
yeah.
It's just like, hey, man, I need to tell you about some shit. You know, sit down on Pappy's lap here.
Let's have some lunch. Let me tell you a war story. And so he tells him, felony.
Hey, man, here's the NFA. Basically, you've committed a felony. He's like, oh my gosh. He's like, just look, man, just take it off right now in front of me. Okay. And just don't put it back together like ever. Here's the process you can go through to do this. Put your other 16-inch upper back on this thing. Don't touch that thing. And now that particular student's got all kinds of SBR and suppressors and all that kind of stuff. So sometimes you might run into someone who's cool about it. But again, understand that that's why they're enforcing it, because there are people who still just – they just don't know.
Yeah, they either don't know or they just blatantly
– or they're just in blatant disregard of the law. Well, now the range doesn't want to be implicit in that
– exactly.
You know, in that potential commission of a crime. It's not, they don't want people at their – ranges committing crimes.
Breaking
not,
federal law.
That's not a good image for the range, right? So it can't be something that they're going to enforce. All right, targets to use. I always like to talk about targets to use on unconventional ranges with our students, because oftentimes when people think about going and setting up their own range, like when you go to a training class, everything's already set up.
Yeah, you show up, there's targets, there's
a variety
frames, there's
of
stands,
targets. Man, there's props and there's, you know, barricades and vehicles and all kinds of cool stuff. And that's really cool. And now you're like, oh man, to train, I need all this crap. I'm gonna need a freaking pickup with a 16-foot enclosed trailer and $500 worth of freaking lumber. And it's like, no, you don't need any of that.
No.
Some of my favorite targets are like cardboard boxes.
And printer paper.
Because I can take a cardboard box and I can fold it flat, right?
Mm-hmm.
Undo all the tape, fold it flat. Take a marker or some printer paper with a basic stapler or some freaking spray-on glue, right? 3M Super 77 is the best.
It's the only one to use for this stuff, by the way.
Is the
if
best
you use
stuff.
Anything else,
don't get the 90 sense. Either. A higher number is not better. It's weird. The 90's weird. just a Super 77 or a basic stapler and a Sharpie. And a flat freaking cardboard box and some copy paper. All that together, you have less than $20 of supplies.
Oh, God.
And you could shoot for a really long time.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could have several range sessions out of this $20. And then when you need to get more, all you need is another cardboard box or maybe some more paper. So you don't need a lot here. That's been some of my favorite targets. When I was driving a lot, when I used to live someplace different than where I live now, and I was much, much further from our main training location, I was on the road a lot. And so I would set up a lot of unconventional ranges, literally because we're open state. I would set them up a lot on the side of the road, not safely on the side of the road, not like literally on the shoulder. But
just standing on the shoulder, doing my
thing. Shooting my shit. But I could, you know, we could pull off, there's a lot of exits we can pull off all of our freeways here, and boom, you're on public land. And as long as you're set up within legal limitations of where you need to be and shooting in the right direction, you can be shooting like right there within sight of the freeway, you know?
Yeah.
And so I would set up, I would, boom, open up my little cardboard box, throw my paper on there, draw something, numbers, letters, shapes, an X, whatever it was I wanted to shoot at, stick it out there at whatever range, throw a freaking rock in the bottom so it doesn't blow away in the wind, and work whatever series of exercises I wanted to do, usually 10 to 20 rounds, fold that thing back up, put it back in the vehicle, and drive away.
Yep.
You know, start to finish is usually 15 to 20 minutes. I mean, really quick and easy. But there's all kinds of other stuff you can use. Obviously, there's steel targets, cardboard targets, paper targets, printed paper targets like the ones from targets.com or Impact Data Books, the consistency target from Guerrilla Approach.
Ed Sherman's got targets.
Yeah, Ed Sherman's got targets. Dot Torture, which is off of pistol forms. 1,001 cool targets that you can print off right on your printer. No cost, really very minimal cost, I should say. And boom, you're ready for a freaking range session. So you don't think you got to go bananas and carry around all this shit. You want
deck
a good
of cards.
What's that?
A deck of cards.
A deck of cards. If you've some got index an, cards, yeah, which are some of my favorite targets.
If you've got a deck of cards, say you've got an old deck of cards that's missing a couple or they're kind of beat up and you don't really use them much anymore, you can take those and then you split the deck in half.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got, say you've got your diamonds and your spades, and then, you know, you've got your hearts and your clubs. Well, you take your diamonds and your spades and you put them up.
Mm-hmm.
And you put up like four, like two diamonds, two spades, right? Mm-hmm. And then you take the other half of your deck and you just shuffle it up and you go black or red. So that way you're not, you know, or you have a friend or you pull it out of a hat, you know, and then that way you can kind of push that accuracy and, you know, you're not necessarily looking to, you're just kind of varying what you're shooting at, I guess is the best way to explain it. And they're small.
Yeah.
So you're working that accuracy.
Yeah, you can work it with pistol. You can work it with rifle. I'll take a deck of cards, especially since I have kids who always manage as we end up sooner or later with a deck of cards that's missing a card or two.
Oh, yeah.
And then so then you get a deck of cards, like you said, that's a complete deck of cards. Yep. And now you can take the, we'll say, the incomplete deck and just cut them in half. Cut them all in half.
Yeah.
Now you have two. Mm-hmm. Nice small targets. Use them for rifle, use them for pistol, whatever. Now you got this nice small target. Work it from close in. Work it as holdover. Maybe just use it as a point of reference.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be that all your shots land perfectly on that card, but you can now use that card to designate a target. And hey, if the hit's on the card, great. Or maybe it's in a 4-inch circle around the card, or a 3-inch circle, or whatever you want to do around the card. And now you have literally twice as many targets to designate. And now I can put, like, maybe I have a piece of paper out there, and I take the 2 of diamonds, the 3 of spades, and the 6 of hearts, and I cut them all in half. Now, technically, I have 6 targets of 3 different types.
Yep.
So now I can say, all right, we're going to go 2 shots on the, 6 and 3 shots on the 3 and 1 shot on the 2. And then you turn, you've got to go, 3 on this one and 2 on this one, 1 on that one or whatever. And now you have a couple different targets to be shooting at. So now I've got to transition between 2 targets. Maybe I do that separately on 2 different cardboard boxes.
Oh,
Now I've got to go from this target to transition, a hard right or a hard left or whatever, to another entirely different target and shoot the same exact exercise on something else. So that's, so many targets you can use, man. Don't think it has to be a big deal. One of the things I like to use in Arizona, because the wind blows all the freaking time, is some basic, if you've got something to tie them to, some basic cheapo balloons and some string or tape or even little alligator clips or something will work. And now I blow up some balloons, put them on string or tape, tape them onto a 2x4 or a tree or a fence post or whatever you got, and boom, moving targets, right? Make them of various different sizes. Now they're blowing around, they're whipping in the wind, and now I'm trying to track it with my pistol, carbine, move and shoot, whatever. But now I've got a little bit of kind of free, cheap moving target stuff. A bag of cheap balloons can't be more than a couple bucks.
A dollar at the dollar
tree. And how many's in there? Probably 20, 50. 30, 50.
25 or 50.
Freaking bunch, right? Every time I buy them, I'm never shocked by the price of
balloons. God, balloons are
expensive. Oh, my gosh, how am I going to afford these balloons? So,
And if you want them to float, a helium tank's like 30 bucks.
Yeah.
And you could, dude, this thing's going to last forever. I've got one.
Hell, you could have them pre-filled.
Yeah.
Get them pre-filled for whatever, 50 cents a piece or whatever. Take them out on the range. Have a dozen of those things ready to go. And maybe for part of your exercises or your final exercise, you've got to shoot through this series and then pop one of the balloons.
Yep.
Shoot through this next series and pop one of the balloons. And now what? You're a dollar into these targets, maybe, if that.
Yeah.
So you can do things that don't cost a ton of money. Print out these targets. You can order all kinds of targets. Action targets, which used formerly law enforcement or LE targets, now owned by Action Targets, is where we get the majority of our big paper targets. We also use extended gun to get some of our torsos. And then precision 3D targets is where we get all of our cardboard, our 3D, and all of our steel. And by the way, anybody who wants to order from precision 3D targets, coupon code IT20 will get you a 20% discount on anything they sell, which is a pretty stinking good deal. 20% discount on steel is that's a lot of discount. So again, think about utilizing unconventional targets on unconventional ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let setting up an unconventional range, thinking about all the targets and all that kind of stuff, be the thing like, oh God, I don't want to gather all that shit up and take it out there and set it all up. Like, it doesn't have to be a lot. Last night I went shooting with the family, and 3 of us were working with our pistol work, and we shot on the same target.
Yeah.
Same exact target. A couple of times at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Working a couple different reactive fire type exercises. Dude, it's not that hard. We each had our own section of the target we were shooting at, and it's like, dude, it was nothing to set that up. And we had 4 cones. I had 4 cones to designate movement positions and 1 frame with 1 target and 3 different firing zones on it. It does not take a lot. And now all 3 of us got a hell of a good workout last night.
Yeah.
We did some close range. We did some long range. We did reactive fire. We did low light. We did movement. We did movement with low light. We did all kinds of different things. We used 2 paper targets, 2 torso paper targets, 4 cones, and 1 target frame. Super, super simple.
Insane.
And we got tons of freaking good work done. We worked on so many different skill sets with one easy setup. So don't think you have to set up this giant course of fire. You want barricades? Don't overthink it. Is it cool to build a big plywood VTAC barricade? Yeah.
Not really.
Is it cool to shoot around your vehicle? Yeah, that's all cool. But if you don't want to shoot your vehicle and you don't want to carry around a giant piece of plywood,
yeah,
bring a folding table. Take that folding table, stick the legs out, prop it up straight up in the air. Now it's a vertical table, and now you can shoot left and right of it. You know, bring an ice chest and shoot around that. Stand it up, you know, prop it up mm-hmm. so the thing's open. Try to get yourself behind that thing. You know, get bring another target frame and just use that target frame as an example of a barricade. You're not training yourself how to shoot around an ice chest or how to shoot around another frame. You're shooting yourself, or you're teaching yourself how to shoot around objects,
around
how to get
things.
Good depth and perception, how to work angles, things like that. So don't think that you have to do this big, crazy course of fire. Cones, man, I love cones to designate movement positions or general areas that we're moving to. And you can get the little orange soccer cones for nothing. Or yeah, those little flat disc ones. I've seen a lot of people using those lately. Those things take up no room and they are crazy cheap.
Yeah, I think like a four pack or a six pack's like $2-3.
Yeah, they're not expensive, right? So all kinds of different setups that you can get even for range
props. Also use rocks and spray paint.
Yeah, rocks and spray paint will work, right? And I don't know if that it may not be environmentally safe or friendly, I mean, for enough people out there. But if you don't like that idea, then don't use it. But rocks and
or
spray paint
can work.
Just use rocks. Yeah. Use your range bag as a marker. I mean, dude, you can go so minimal. I have used stuff out of my truck to be a range marker when I'm like, oh, shit, I forgot, you know.
I forgot X, Y, or Z.
But I want to do this, so I'm like, this coat is position number one. This range bag is my position number two. And this pile of empty brass is position number three because I forgot shit, you know.
This pile of shotgun holes.
Yeah, it's like, whatever, man. Just don't overthink it. You're not training for these very, very specific things most of the time. I'm not training to move to cones. I'm training to move to certain positions and avoid certain things.
Yeah.
You know, I use cones, for example, to train to avoid things. Like maybe I'm avoiding a curb or a rock or another person or a vehicle or something like that in the real world. I'm just using this object in it as a placeholder for that object, right? So many different things that you can use. I mean, the really... your imagination is your limit here.
Yeah.
You know, now steel targets are what they are. They're heavier, they're bigger, but you don't have to get a giant steel target that weighs 100 pounds.
No.
Get a couple of small circles that come in a collapsible setup like the ones that Precision 3D Target sells. Action Target sells some decent ones. Our buddy Jake Vibbert over at JC Steel sells some really cool different collapsible steel targets. Again, p3dt.com. You get your coupon code over there and you get a sweet discount. But all kinds of different small, easy to move around setups. AR500 Armor, actually, I was just looking at steel setups.
They have some cool setups.
Their whole setup completely breaks down flat.
Yeah.
It's a little more work to put together, obviously, but it breaks down super flat. So you could easily transport this in the back of a freaking Toyota Camry or whatever, you know? So you don't think you need a whole bunch of stuff. Now, stewardship and good manners. That's really critical for
probably one of
unconventional ranges as well.
Probably one of the most important things, in my opinion, is if you're out on public land, or, you know, we'll say public land or like an open public range like the one down in Casa Grande, the few times I've been down there, that place looks like a garbage pile because people just don't clean
just
up after
their
themselves.
Shit. Yeah.
Always, 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 I swear to God, if I ever catch you not, we will not be friends.
Bust your ass.
I will get super grumpy super fast. Always clean up your shit. Mm. Pick up your brass, pick up your shotgun holes. I don't care if it's steel case ammo. I don't care if it's .22. If you're on public land, pick up your shit. Mm. Clean up after yourself. And if somebody was there before you that didn't clean up, just clean up a little bit extra. Mm. It's not going to hurt you.
Ain't going to kill you.
You know, take an extra 2 or 3 minutes and pick up a little bit of somebody else's stuff. It's not shoot up your TV and dishwasher and computer screen day and leave it out there. That's why one of the most convenient public shooting spaces that I used to use got shut down because of trash. And it happens all the time. You know, one of the areas that we used to use almost got shut down because people kept dumping there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we showed up to teach a class one morning and there was an old roof. Essentially,
someone had torn an entire roof off and left it in the fucking desert for us.
Yep, left it right there for us. So, good stewardship, man. Clean up after your stuff and make sure, and this kind of ties into the legalities, but like Arizona, there's a lot of free range land too. So part of your stewardship is knowing and looking to see if there's cattle there. You know, if there are, maybe go find another spot. Mm-hmm. You know, just don't be a good human and don't be a piece of shit is essentially what stewardship boils down to me.
And be flexible when other people show up. You know, if you're going to be on unconventional ranges like the Casa Grande Range and someone, you know, you show up, someone else can show up and you're out there running and gunning, doing your exercises, running your cool guy drills or whatever. And they show up and they're like, hey, man, my kid's got a side in a rifle, or hey, I need to side in a rifle for my hunt. Or I'm trying to teach, you know, someone how to shoot a 22 here or something. Be like, hey, man, I was here first. It's like, dude, don't be a dick.
Yeah, exactly.
Can you adjust your course of fire so that they can accomplish what they need to accomplish? When I was living up in
– Or can you just take a break?
Or yeah, hey, dude, what if I'm hungry anyway. I got to take a shit, whatever. 30 minutes, 45 minutes, what's it going to take for you to do this? You know, I'll go reload my mags. I'll work on some dry fire. You know, I will go grab some food, take a dump, whatever it is you got to do, right? Sit and Instagram so everybody knows I went to the range, whatever it is that you feel like.
Yeah, because it's not real if you didn't put it on Instagram.
Nope. So it's one of those things where just be a good human, like you already said. Be a flexible. When I was still living in Prescott, most of the range I used up there, I rarely went to a conventional range. Just wasn't needed. We were literally surrounded by a giant shooting range. And so I would go out and use public land. Well, sometimes I'd be out there and other people would show up. Sometimes they'd even do things that were kind of dangerous. Now, I could go over there and storm over and be like, hey, you son of a bitch, you freaking are shooting. It's like, instead, I go over there. One time I went over there and I said, this guy was out there with his family and they're out there kind of hee-haw shooting. And I went there and I said, hey, man, can I ask you a question? He said, yeah, what's going on? I said, hey, dude. Did you know that when you shoot glass bottles, even if you pick up the big pieces, which in my heart I'm like, I know you're not going to do, but I didn't say that. I'm like, you know, it still leaves like really small shards. And there's a lot of livestock and game animals and stuff around here. And I'd hate for some of that stuff to end up in their feed or anything like that. Or for some kid to be out here playing around the desert and cut themselves, you know. This is a pretty big family area that people come to shoot. He's like, man, you know, I didn't really think about that. I go, yeah, dude, I tell you what, I've got some extra targets.
Yeah.
Like, if you guys are just looking for some targets to shoot at, can we do that maybe instead of shooting at bottles? And he was just like, dude, I never really thought about that. Now, are you always going to get that response?
No.
Some people just be like, hey, man, this is America, and I fought for our country back in Nam. And you're like, fucking whatever, then shoot the stupid bottles. I don't care. Because there's nothing you can do to stop people from being stupid, right?
You can
get mad
stupid.
Or whatever, but now you got a confrontation with two armed people. That's not a good idea. So at that point, be like, fine, leave and walk away and report it if you have to or whatever, but be done with it. What I have found throughout the majority of dealing with situations like that is that most of the time, I'm going to say 97% of the time, when I go up there and go, hey, maybe we could do something a little differently, they're amicable to it.
Yeah, as long as
they're not, they don't always give me 100% of what I want.
No.
But they're amicable to not being a jerk about it.
It's weird, like, if you treat people not like dicks and you don't behave like a dick, you get a lot better response.
And then if they're acting like a jerk, then be like, hey, man, look, I think I'm just going to clean up my stuff and leave. So if you guys would do me a favor and just stay cold, please don't shoot while I'm cleaning up my stuff. I got to go clean up my gear. I'm going to clean up my stuff. I think I'm going to go ahead and bail out of here.
Yeah.
Right? And some people want to take the stance of like, I won't leave. He should leave. And it's like, well, he's not freaking going to. So if you want to stay here and put your own life at risk, then you knock yourself out. But if there's some other place I can go, or if I've had enough range time, I'll just call it quits, right? Because I'm not going to put myself at risk doing this, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you have good manners and you have good stewardship, it's probably going to be okay.
Yeah.
You know, generally speaking, you know, don't litter, clean up after yourself, like John said, and be good to other people, especially when everyone's armed, right? Armed society, polite society, be polite when other people have guns. It's a good idea so you don't get shot. Last thing we're going to talk about, this is going to be kind of quick because we've done an entire show on this, and that's setting up shooting exercises.
Yeah.
But to talk about this at the last few minutes of the show here, quick, efficient shooting exercises, set up a series of quick, efficient things that are based on your plan, that use a minimal amount of ammo, and that really force you to focus on skill development whatever's in your plan,
yeah,
and make you accountable for your shots. So you can work on a number of different skill sets within one shooting exercise, or you can just focus on one skill set in a shooting exercise. It's really up to you, of course. So how do you make things quick and efficient? I like to make all my shooting exercises less than 15 rounds most of the time.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to have to force a reload unless I also want to work on reloads.
Yep.
If that's part of the plan, then I'll either low load my mags, or maybe I'll make it 20 rounds so I have to reload or something like that. But I try to keep all my shooting exercises really small, and usually even smaller than that. Like last night, for example, when I was out shooting, all of our shooting exercises were like 6 to 12 rounds. That was it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we all just managed ammo as needed. So it's like, look, if you're managing your magazines, you shouldn't really have to reload. And if you're starting to get low because you've managed all your magazines and now they're all low, then sooner or later you're going to hit a reload during one of these exercises, and then just do your freaking reload. And if doing your reload, you're like, damn, that sucked, then next time you go out, you should probably put in your plan to work on your reloads.
Yep.
You know, so low round count exercises that you can track your performance through time or accuracy or both.
Yep.
Low round count exercises that stress either one specific skill set or several. Like maybe I'll give everyone the idea what we were doing last night. So we set up a target. It was a standard torso target. I set up cones at 3, 5, 7, and 10 yards. We wanted to work on just defensive shooting last night. So we first thing we did was we set a standard cold. Everybody cold from the holster. First shot impact is the only thing we counted. Mm-hmm. 3 rounds per position. So from the three yards basically, 3 rounds from that position, and we scored it. It was worth 3 points, 2 points, 1 point, or no points based on where you impacted. And so everybody from the holster on the beep, draw, 1, 2, 3. Only look at your first round. We did that from the 3, the 5, the 7, and the 10. Then we averaged out the time, and then on the paper we wrote the person's first initial, how many points they dropped out of a perfect score, which would have been whatever, 12 times 3. So 36 would have been a perfect score. So how many points did they drop? And then what their average first hit was. Right. So then we kept track of that on the paper. Then we ran through a series of exercises that developed each one of those skills. So we started at 3 and we worked from a high compressed position on the buzzer, extend, compressing the trigger as you extend, or prepping the trigger as you extend. So as soon as your sights align, whether at full extension or not, as soon as the sights are aligned appropriately on the target, fire the shot. Mm-hmm. So we worked on that for about 20 rounds each. And we did it first individually, and then we did it reflexive or reactive fire, where all three of us got on the line at the same time. First person shot, and then the second person tried to keep that same person's cadence.
Yeah.
And then the third person tried to keep that same person's cadence. And the first person tried to keep that same person's cadence.
Oh, nice.
So it was like boom, boom, boom. And then I was the first person, so I'd pick up the cadence. Boom, 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 boom. So we're trying to go faster and faster and faster and faster until everybody was sub-second. That was the goal, is to get everybody at like 0.7, 0.8, whatever, like bam, just get out there and hammer that thing. That was kind of the goal, you know? And obviously you can get way faster than that, you know, but we had a goal, we had a plan, and we had a goal. We want everybody to be here. And then we worked on that. Then we moved back to the 5 and we just worked on draw and presentation. Mm-hmm. Good, smooth draw presentation, and then adding that first step into that. Did that for about 20 rounds, right? Then we started to lose the light, so we went ahead and shot the standard exercise again, based on the fact of improving those two skill sets, which was just first shot on target and a good clean presentation. Everybody got better, which was great. We wanted to see that standard. We measured against that standard, and we were good to go. Started getting dark, so we pulled out our lights. We put the cones, instead of a straight line, we put them in a diamond formation, and the goal was to move from one cone to the next, stay within the diamond, and engage with your light, whether weapon-mounted or handheld, illuminate the target, and engage it before you get to that next cone, and then work that diamond formation. No shot counts this time. We all probably went through
a lot more ammo.
Maybe 100 rounds.
Yeah.
Yeah. But all the individual exercises were low round count.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We all went through about 100 rounds and tracked all our accuracy the whole time, and we accomplished a lot. Like we were able to work on a lot of different skill sets using one target frame, 2 paper targets,
yep,
a marker and some marking tape, and and four cones, or four anything that would designate positions. In our case, we use cones. So that stressed a lot of different skill sets, and we were able to work on a lot of different concepts and track and record the results of those things without having to set up this entirely intense range.
Yep.
Cleaned up our brass, put one target and four cones in the back of the truck. We happened to be at the range we used, so we were able to go put them in the storage container, and boom, we're done.
Done.
You know, all three of us did all of that, maybe, and we kind of messed around a little bit a couple of times, so maybe it took us an hour and a half. So you don't have to have these long extended range times with all these freaking rounds being fired, tons of different guns and all that shit. So there's an example of which there are thousands more. Be creative.
Yeah, be creative and keep it simple. Keep it as simple or as complicated as you want.
But like John said, make sure you go to the range with a plan. Of yep. all other things, have a plan that includes what you want to accomplish, an emergency response plan,
yep.
and how you're going to improve on the things you see. All right. Remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Email us, info@trainingaz.com. We'll give you all the details about how that works. It's really easy to host us. And as a host, you train for free, as long as you get us a minimum number of students. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. Also, make sure you follow us on Instagram as Dirt Medicine. If you're on Instagram, look up Dirt Medicine. It's a cool little website or a cool little Instagram account. I mean, we designed just for our Dirt Medicine content. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group, so make sure you check us out on the network. Lots of good shows on there. Next week, we're back live. We are live.
Yeah, we'll be live.
We will be live next week. We are going to be going over our intro to Dirt Medicine concepts with demonstrations. We're going to show basic stop bleeding, basic start breathing stuff. We've talked about some medical stuff recently, and we want to put it a little bit more into hands-on practice for those of you who will be watching the video. For those of you listening, we'll be very detailed describing what we're doing. So that's what we're going to be doing next week. Until then, stay safe and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.